of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Deputy Mayor? I've got to find my place again.
Would you like me to call the roll?
Yep. So, roll call.
Ms. Becker?
Here.
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Dibdow?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis? Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Present.
Mayor Sanford?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. The first order of business is a proclamation that I'm going to read, and Mr. Wanamaker has worked hard, as all of you know, on the USS Juno gathering of letters from a person back during World War II who passed away on the USS Juno, and we have a nice proclamation here from the mayor's office in accordance with that, and that'll kind of kick off the week that the Mr. Wanamaker is going to do down here with all the different groups, museums, and a dedication down at the dock and that. If for some reason you don't go to up to AML for the week, make sure you look at what's being presented for the USS Juno and go to some of those ceremonies because I think they'll be heart-wrenching and warm for sure. So from the Office of the Mayor, City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, proclamation. USS Juno Remembrance. Whereas the USS Juno CL-52 was a light cruiser commissioned in February 1942 by the U.S. Navy, and whereas the USS Juno was named in honor of the city of Juno, the capital of the territory of Alaska, now the city and borough of Juno, the capital of the state of Alaska, and whereas the USS Juno served in the Atlantic, Caribbean, and Pacific theaters in defense of our freedoms, and whereas on November 13, 1942, at the naval battle of Guadalcanal, the USS Juno was struck by two torpedoes and sank in 20 seconds, with the immediate loss of nearly 600 of her crew and of the 700 officers and men aboard. Whereas after exposure, thirst, weakness due to their wounds, and shark attacks, only 10 survivors lasted in the water. Whereas four medical personnel also survived because they were transferred to the USS San Francisco to assist with the heavy casualties on that ship just before the USS Juno was torpedoed. And whereas November 13, 2012 marks the 70th anniversary of the sinking of the USS Juno, and it is fitting and proper that the citizens of the city and borough of Juneau remember the price of our freedom. Now, therefore, I, Merrill Sanford, mayor of the city and borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the city and borough assembly, in honor of the gallant crew of the USS Juneau who helped secure our liberties at the cost of themselves, do hereby proclaim USS Juneau Remembrance Week, November 11 to 17, 2012. In witness whereof I have heretofore set my hand and caused the seal of the city and borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed this fifth day of November 2012. Merrill Sanford, Mayor. Thank you very much, Randy, for bringing that forward. Okay, approval of minutes. We have the October 15th, 2012 Special Assembly Meeting 2012-28. Ms. Crane.
I only saw one thing. Under the roll call, we have Ruth Danner as present, and she was not.
All right. Are there any other corrections? So the minutes of 2012-28 stand as amended. Next, we'll move to the October 22nd, 2012 Regular Assembly Meeting 2012-29. Any corrections? Any Mr. Jones?
I assume it's okay. I just, on the roll call, page four, on a roll call vote on my motion to put the ordinance back to the committee of the whole. I thought Ms. Crane voted no, and Mr. Didbell voted aye, but I wasn't sure. And when I read the motion, that they were reversed in the minutes. I couldn't recollect, so.
I voted yes.
Okay, then they're correct.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other corrections? Is there any objections to their approval? Seeing none, the October 22nd, 2012-29 meeting is accepted. Manager's request for any agenda changes?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I have two that I'd like to add. Under unfinished business, I would like to discuss a retreat date follow-up for our goal setting. And then under new business, I'd like to have us discuss a non-code ordinance for the Heritage Foundation building. So we'll put those two under the agenda to be discussed today. Public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak to us about a non-agenda item? All right. We'll move forward to the consent agenda. Is there any of the public who requests consent agenda changes other than ordinances for introduction? Any changes to the consent agenda from the public? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly requests for consent agenda changes. Seeing none, we'll move forward. Ms. Becker, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, we'll move forward to public hearing. And the first issue ordinance of the day is ordinance 2012-20T. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $5,689,247 as additional funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Safety Area Capital Improvement Project. Grant funding provided by the Federal Aviation Administration and the Juneau International Airport.
Administration report, Madam.
This additional funding brings the total project cost to date of $23,964,693 for further grant with further grant funding anticipated. This portion of the Phase 2 runway safety area project includes design, engineering, and construction of approach lighting to runway 8. The FAA funds 93.75% of the project, with the remainder being split between the Alaska Department of Transportation and the Juneau International Airport. Juneau International Airport match represents the value of fill material provided to the Federal Aviation Administration for this project. The Airport Board recommended this action at its October 10, 2012 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly action. Mr. Dibdahl.
Yes, I'd like to move ordinance 2012-20T and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections to that action? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you, Mr. Dibdahl. We'll move forward to Madam Clerk reading the title for 2012-41.
An ordinance repealing the sunset date on the CBJ hardship exemption.
The manager's report.
When the CBJ hardship exemption, which reduces individual property taxes in case of financial hardship, was amended in 2010, the Assembly included a sunset date, which would automatically repeal the exemption as of December 31, 2012. This ordinance would repeal the sunset date and make the exemption permanent. In 2010, before this exemption was adopted, there were 188 hardship exemptions. In 2011, the number dropped to 94, and this year was 105. Total amount exempted in 2010 was $327,800, and for this year it was $193,862. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, we'll move forward to assembly action. Ms. Crane?
I move adoption of ordinance 2012-41 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, hearing none, we'll move forward to our next agenda item. which is ordinance 2012-42. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance relating to shooting ranges.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. City Manager's report.
CBJ Code 42.20.050 prohibits the discharge of firearms within 1/4 mile of a road within the borough, exempting police officers in the line of duty. It also has exceptions allowing the discharge of certain weapons within the Mendenhall Wetlands State Game Refuge or the Hank Harmon Rifle Range, the Juneau Gun Club, and facilities operated by the state or federal government. This ordinance would change the penal code by adding an exemption to allow the discharge of weapons at private shooting ranges within 1/4 mile of the road if the facilities are permitted consistent with the CBJ Land Use Code Table of Permissible Uses. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody? Well, we do have three people signed up to talk to us. Mark Miller. Come forward right here and state your name and residence. Yes.
My name is Mark Miller. Do you want my address also?
Yes, please.
I live at 9404 Long Run Drive, Juneau, Alaska. And I'm of the understanding that the armor you're talking about was the one that was in the newspaper a couple of weeks ago. Okay. I believe the proposed private army is dangerously inappropriate. AK-47s, machine guns, and other assault weapons are just that, assault weapons. They are designed and intended for assault operations. Assault is the stuff of police and military action, and as such requires a chain of command ultimately responsible to elected officials serving the citizens for whom they are sworn to protect. Please do not place our police and military personnel and our citizens in more danger by promoting assault weapons as casual entertainment for the general public. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Miller? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Miller.
Do I leave this?
You can leave it for staff, and they'll put it in the record. Thank you for your testimony. We'll move forward to Mr. Dan Miller. Name and rank.
Thank you. Dan Miller, 9882 Lone Wolf Drive, Juneau, Alaska. I am the president of Juneau Mercantile and Armory Corporation. We're the entity that wants to build the indoor shooting range and gun store. Contrary to some of the way that the article was written, we're not going to rent out guns for people to take and leave the building with. The range is going to be the first half of the range that we're building is going to have a static firing line. In other words, people will stand at one spot and shoot towards targets. They'll have a total containment bullet trap. The entire basement is encased in concrete. Noise and safety won't be an issue. The AK-47s mentioned by Mr. Miller, that we will have those for rent. And but when we talk about fully automatic weapons, every single person that will be allowed to shoot those will be escorted to the firing line and will have a handler to teach them the use of the weapon and whatnot. So safety is utmost important to us, and we the facility will also be able to be used by local police and state troopers and in other parts of the country. A big portion of the local population that uses these facilities are the law enforcement people.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Miller. Are there any questions for Mr. Miller? Thank you very much, Dan. In our last public testimony, Mr. Swanson. Is there anybody else out there who wishes to testify on this ordinance? Thank you.
My name is Ron Swanson. I live at 4041 Aquan Lane, and I come to speak in favor of this amendment to an ordinance. I think that probably when the original ordinance was made, it was just an oversight that said you know, the people that are named in the ordinance could have a rifle range, and I'm hoping you folks decide that this is an appropriate thing. I've looked on the internet. At first I thought, I'll try not to be too lengthy, although that's hard for me. You know, this was a fly-by-night thing. It would last through two Father's Day and a Christmas, and nobody would go use it. But I've since learned that there's lots of parts of the country where machine gun ownership, even gun ownership, is severely restricted. And I think we get a lot of those people from not only states but countries that these people have never had the opportunity to participate. And there's a little bit of Walter Mitty, I think, in all of us. And so I think it's a very viable proposal that the tourists will go out there to say when they go back to Connecticut or wherever they're from, I shot a machine gun when I was in Alaska. Let me say I don't own any stock in this company. I don't own a bolt in the building. I have no financial interest at all in this thing. I just think it would be a good thing for Juneau. I think it'll bring dollars to Juneau. And to address, is your name Mr. Miller as well? I don't think it promotes widespread use of machine guns throughout the city. That is already not prohibited. I own three machine guns. I've had them for 20 years. Nobody's ever read about me in the police blotter. Keep them under lock and key. So there are privately owned machine guns in the community, but of course we don't rent them out and have a place to shoot them. We go out to the range or shoot them. So I think that's already happened, and it hasn't been a problem for policemen or anybody else that I know about. So right. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Are there any questions for Mr. Swanson? Seeing none, thank you very much. Again, last time, public input. Seeing none, what's the pleasure of the assembly? Mr. Joe Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the adoption of Ordinance 2012-42 and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Mr. Jones.
Just for a couple questions, if I might. Under the manager's report, it talked about allowing the discharge of certain weapons. Does that mean that the current rifle range or the gun club has some restrictions on the type of weapons or size of weapons or something that can be discharged, and who sets those?
Mr. Hartle.
What I was thinking of putting that in is the restriction to shotguns only on the game refuge, Mendham Hobart State Game Refuge, allows only shotguns, I believe. And that's what it says in the code as well.
So there's no other restrictions on the rifle range, the Hank Harmon, or the Juneau Gun Club? There's no restrictions on what can be discharged?
I think there are. At each one of those facilities have some different types of restrictions in accordance with their...
But it's their restrictions, not something that the Planning Commission puts on or the Assembly or any ordinance.
Yeah, Mr. Hartle.
I believe that's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Jones, you withdraw your...
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Are there any other? Okay. Passed and unanimous. Thank you very much, everybody. Unfinished business. We are going to try to have and finish up our retreat on November the 19th at the Committee of the Whole night. We have we had a couple of things on the agenda for that night, and one or two of them have dropped off, and we're going to put our goal setting on that night. If Scott from McDowell Group can't make it, then we'll have staff, Myla, finish us up on that, and I'll try to get that goal-setting report from McDowell Group to each of you so you can study it as homework up at AML. Come on, I didn't hear all of you laugh. Mr. Jones.
I know it's on that calendar, and I've talked to the clerk. I will be attending that meeting by phone.
Okay.
So if I can get the information early, I can have it in front of me down in New Mexico.
Yeah, and we have the information right now, just that I have to get it broke out into our format so that you guys can have it and move forward on. So
okay.
Hopefully
appreciate
we'll
that.
Do that.
Thanks.
In the next two or three days. That's all I have for unfinished business. We have under new business, non-code ordinance. What I wanted to do is put out a ask the assembly if they're willing to look at a non-court or non-code ordinance, say that four times, to look at the heritage, Sea Alaska Heritage Building Center. They have gone through a big process with CDD in the past 6 months and are at a point where they have a bunch of these different proposals that they have to meet according to the historical district standards that they wish to not necessarily meet them exactly for sure. So what they want to do is try to have a get-together and a non-court ordinance for that site because it's right on the edge of the mining historical district, and maybe pull that site out of the historical district and let it be controlled by the regular codes that we have instead of the historical district codes. That'll help eliminate some of the requirements that are being proposed, and that will then go through us to staff to look at and bring back this ordinance that spells that out. So I'd like to hear anybody's discussion on that at all. Mr. Wanamaker?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do think that's an appropriate thing to do, given the complexity of the historical code district requirements. And it would be the preparation of a non-code ordinance by our law department for discussion by the assembly, either as the committee of the whole or as the assembly. And in the meantime, we could learn more about the various reasonings behind the need for that particular code ordinance change. So I do support it, and it's a request to have an ordinance prepared for us for our review and discussion. Thank you.
Mr. Jesse Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess my question would be whether this would be a complete removal of this property from the historic district, or would this be a non-code ordinance to relax some of the standards? I know I've had conversations with some of the folks from Sea Alaska Heritage about the difference between the Front Street side, which is very much the historic look, and the Seward Street side, which really fronts on other parts of the town. Do we have a sense of which is being discussed here?
I think all of it is, in my estimation, all of those things need to be looked at and discussed. One of the things that I wouldn't recommend us do is move forward on, like, the parking standard. There's some issues, and the parking standard has been, made more flexible in the past 5 to 10 years. And I think we've held everybody accountable to that standard within the downtown district, that I don't think that we should step out away from those rules and regulations, let it go through the process and see where it ends up in the end for parking. But I have no problem looking at all of those, the vegetative cover, the historical requirements and all those things, to look at those and see if there's a way to do a non-code ordinance. And maybe Mr. Hartle could explain to us just a hair about non-code ordinances and what they do. Mr. Hartle?
I've heard two different concepts, and I'm happy to do either one or both. One is to move the boundary of the historic district so that it skirts around that site, you know, so that site would no longer be within the boundaries of the downtown historic district. The second is to, and that would be a code ordinance, because that district is adopted by code, or location of it, I believe. The second is a non-code ordinance that would exempt that particular development from certain requirements of the code. So again, I'm looking for direction. I'm happy to do either or both, whatever the assembly says.
Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did have a discussion with the Sea Alaska Heritage folks about this morning, and their preference is for the non-code ordinance approach. So in order that we formally discuss it, I move that the assembly direct the city attorney to prepare a non-code ordinance for the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute Walter Soboloff Cultural Center for consideration by the Assembly and introduction.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Waterman. And again, that includes having meetings with staff, senior staff, with Sea Alaska and CDD, and trying to formulate the best non-code ordinance that we can to move forward with. Mr. Wanamaker, do you agree, or does the rest of the Assembly members agree, that the parking requirement should stay in the normal rotation of what they are and let the chips fall wherever they may with that?
Mr. Mayor, I do, because I believe they're separate issues.
Yeah. Okay, I get that. Mr. Jones?
To help me learn a little here, the end product, if we were to pass an ordinance, code or non-code, basically change the rules under which then the Planning Commission would issue their permits or discuss what needs to be done. Is that sort of the purpose of this, is to give instructions to the Planning Commission?
Yes. Mr. Hartle?
You both stated it exactly right. To pass an ordinance for this specific project, which exempts it from the rules that the Assembly decides to exempt it from. You know, you can exempt it from one rule, from many rules, from whichever ones you choose. I understand, you know, there are a few sticking points right now, and this would exempt that building from certain of the historical district.
And all that will have to come back to us to make that decision with that ordinance, non-code or code. So, Mr. Jones?
If I might, I mean, I'm just trying to learn process here. Since we have a couple appeals before us of Planning Commission decisions, I mean, I realize that we pass probably a lot of ordinances that affect the Planning Commission's decisions. If we pass this one in particular on a particular property, what does that do if the Planning Commission makes a decision that then gets appealed?
Go ahead, Mr. Hartle.
I think this would...
It's my opinion.
Well, first of all, that's why it's a non-code ordinance. It doesn't go into our general land use code for all future projects. It's targeted at this particular development and says, you know, this parcel will be exempt from these rules, so that it would avoid an appeal on that project, and it's intended at least to not affect other appeals. It wouldn't change the code with respect to any other project but that one.
So the intention of by passing the code and by that giving instructions to the Planning Commission is to potentially avoid an appeal, because the Planning Commission and them haven't come to some agreement yet?
As I understand it, if I may, as proposed right now, that project wouldn't meet the code, and so that it wouldn't get a conditional use permit to go ahead and be constructed. So rather than change the project, this would change the code.
Okay.
Ms. Crane.
I appreciate the comment about, you know, having staff involved in this as well, but when it comes before us, I would also be interested in knowing what the Historic Resources Commission has to say about whatever is proposed.
That's a good point. Mr. Jones. Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I'm going to do that for the rest of your guys' turn.
Sorry about that.
Maybe I just call you S&J or something.
Something.
Briefly, I wonder, for those that have not had the discussions with the Institute, maybe you, Mr. Mayor, could share with the rest of the Assembly what the cost implications are to redesign the structure as it's being proposed or could be proposed with the existing rules.
Right. And if you look at what has happened, I don't know for how long, at least 6 months, I think staff has been working with Sea Alaska and the foundation to try to come up with what has to be followed and what doesn't have to necessarily, the shells and the maybes part of it all. And when we wrote the historic district regulations, we did it in accordance to the mining era, 100-year-old buildings.
Right.
We did not fit into that, in my you know, I don't want to get into opinions here, but I guess I'd have to a little bit. In my opinion, we didn't take into consideration other parts of our community necessarily. And what is said right now, the cultural interests of our native community doesn't fit in the downtown area, the historical district. Well, that might be true to the paperwork that's involved and all the paperwork and plans that we have, but in my opinion, again, as your mayor, that that's a ridiculous statement to have to make for our native community and the culture that they bring back for 10,000 years, that a building that they're designing and want to put in, it's going to meet all the safety requirements and all that other stuff, code stuff like that. It's just not going to necessarily look like a mining era building. It's going to have its own motif. Some of the color code that's involved with the code says you can't have two contrasting colors in the motif. So here we have our native heritage that has a bright, you know, diversified color scheme to what they do and all their arts and culture. They want to build that into this beautiful building, and right now that can't be done. So what we want to do is try to see how we can blend all this together and be able to build this important building for all of our community, not just the Native community or any one part of it, but all of our community. Mr. Jones.
That helps a lot, Mr. Mayor. I really appreciate that. And I hope that as this process unfolds, there might be a great learning experience for somebody new like me to sort of understand what's being exempted, what the historic district says now, why we're maybe making that change as a education opportunity rather than just sort of say, you know, well, this will fit this building and we just need to make this exception. Mm-hmm. I'd like to be able to learn why, you know, that versus something else. I think it would be appropriate for me anyway.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the assembly? Everybody's got the motion down, what we asked staff to do. Is there any objections to that motion? Seeing none. Have you got clarity, Madam Manager?
Yes.
Okay. I think it's spelled out pretty well. And I think basically what we want to do is see that this happens. We need to have this building happen, and I think it will be a great addition to our downtown. And as you all know, we just lost one of our other additions to downtown in the last couple days. And that kind of moves us on to that a little bit here. One other staff reports, I guess. I might as well follow the agenda. Staff reports first. Are there any?
I just want to, based on Monday night, thank the Assembly for being flexible, number one. Thank the public for moving out of downtown. And thank the outpouring of support that we received from businesses, from community members, from people throughout Southeast, from the governor's office. Way too many people to note here, but we are very touched by everybody's support to help us. And we will be pulling together that list of people as we debrief this this situation. But I just want to thank everybody for their support.
Mr. Hartle?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The hearing officer in the Mattson appeal has finished a draft decision, and that is circulating to the parties now. There's a several-step process to finishing dealing with the appeal, but the plan for the moment is to bring it back to the next regular assembly meeting, which I believe is on the 26th. Should be able to complete the process at that time.
All right. Thank you. So there's a couple of is this the only appeal that's within the next Christmas time?
No, there's two of them.
Two.
This one should be completable under unfinished business, perhaps, at the next regular meeting.
Okay.
And then also the hearing is scheduled for the 26th, the same day, in the 16B appeal, the Osborne appeal.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Jones.
If I might on that, I know we were given a large booklet at passed out to some of us at the human resource meeting before everything else got canceled. And I started to read it, and I was just asking clarification. Am I allowed to call the attorney and say, I don't understand any of this, or can I call the attorney with questions, or do I simply read it and come to the meeting?
Mr. Harlan?
Calling me with questions would be great. Obviously, you should not talk to any of the parties on any appeal about the content of the appeal. You can tell them I said so if necessary, and it's in the code. But I'm happy to answer any questions if you want to meet with me, whatever you need on it.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. Assembly reports. First of all, I just want to say that we also have tentatively set up December 10th for an Assembly Planning Commission togetherness meeting. So that's tentative right now, and it'll probably be as early as we can on that date to go over some of the Planning Commission's concerns. I don't know if we've cleared it through everybody yet, but we're trying to set all these dates up, and we're running out of days to do things in, aren't we, Madam Manager?
We are.
And I'm sure each one of you are running out of time to give to your assembly duties, but they're all good things that we're doing, and I look forward to meeting with the Planning Commission and talking about some of their concerns and thoughts to us, and how do we deal with some of those things, for sure. The only other thing that I want to report on right now is the fire, of course, and the manager gave thank yous to a lot of different people, but it's just amazing when we have, and this is just a little emergency that we had. It could have got a lot worse real quick, and we could have lost a lot more of downtown, and so we need to really pay attention to our firefighters in that department and the water department that gives us so much beautiful water to be able to douse a fire like this. It's important. I don't know how many gallons we ended up putting on. I would imagine it was probably 5 to 7 million gallons worth in the end over the whole night. There was a while there where they were putting probably 5 to 7,000 gallons a minute on the fire. So with all those monitors and the big guns going, it adds up really quick and depletes our water reservoirs fairly fast. But we were never in any danger of any water shortage or anything like that. They were able, after they slowed down a little bit after the initial attacks and slowed down the amount of water that they were putting on, the pumps from other districts, from other reservoirs helped keep the mill tunnel full and ready for our availability to use. So, but I just want to make sure that you all, if you know a firefighter or a fire person and you see them on the street, say thank you. If you know the businesses, just come out of the woodwork on these types of things. And the different businesses and private people who came out, those dang firemen never lose any weight at these fires because the good people, the good citizens of our community come out with tons of cases of water. They had 40 cases of water on scene that night all of a sudden. They had 20 cases of juice over there. The city manager and the crew over here should have went over there to get refurbished. But although Jesse, Mr. Keel, showed up down here with some goodies for us, so that was very nice. But I tell you, those firemen get spoiled real fast by our business community and by our private citizens who come around and bring a bag full of bagels in. It was just really interesting to see the different things that showed up at our rehab facilities for our firefighters and that. And the Sitka Fire Department, we were able to bring five or six of them over from Sitka and help us out because at about 5:30, 6 o'clock, when Jesse's, Mr. Keel's committee got canceled, we really didn't know how bad of a situation we were in yet and or how good and lucky we were going to be. And so we wanted to plan for the long term of all night and into the next day, and that would have given us some 5 or 6 professional firefighters from and volunteers from Sitka to help us out and relieve some of our duty personnel. They didn't have to get used as much, but they were used the next day for not only cleanup but for investigative purposes and for searching the total building package to make sure we didn't have anybody hidden away anywhere or who had passed away anywhere in the building. So they did a tremendous job. The governor called, and his staff called. Our legislative liaisons and representatives all called for any assistance that any of them could do and was offered. So it's neat to see the spirit of our community come out in these emergency situations. So, Ms. Crane.
I have a firefighter who lives on my road, and talked to him afterwards, and he happened to mention that they had just reviewed that building the week before because it's such an intricate building to fight a fire. So they had just gone over their plans mm-hmm. the week before, which was really good that they're just remaining on top of all of that. Yeah. So.
They had a company officers drill there, and that's what the senior officers and company officers were able to go through and see all the tricks of the trade there that gets very dangerous. That type of fire scared me as your mayor because of my 30 years experience in that field. I was very worried about getting somebody hurt or killed because that situation, you can't foresee all of the possibilities. And of course, they're trying to be the people who save our community as a whole, whether we burn down one structure or a whole block, makes a big difference. And it's a dangerous profession, and we all know that. And so if you know somebody, just stop them. Say, hey, fireman, thank you very much. That's all you have to do, and they'll be very appreciative.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I also think we should mention the agencies like Red Cross and United Way and the Glory Hole and other groups that opened doors immensely, and the city that opened the Centennial Hall for the Red Cross to set up for people to stay, and there were, 30 or 40 people who were displaced from this, so I know we're not finished with that. There's still going to be quite a bit that needs to be done in this community to help those people, but I think not only did our citizens and all, but our nonprofit groups, who we help support too, they came out and were just right there helping, and I agree with you that our firemen are just fantastic. They kept it all on that one floor.
There's a big long list of helps, you know, that the manager will put together, I'm sure, in a little after action report that says thank you to all these different groups and people, for sure, because it was widespread. It wasn't, you know, and our staff did a great job, and I know Mr. Watt was down there for a while and helped with engineering type stuff at the 10 or 11 o'clock at night. Again, when you pour that much water on a building, it becomes a hazard just in collapse situations. So thanks, Mr. Watt, and I see the water department there. The water department guy is here, Mr. Duncan. All those things worked the way they should. I'm sure some of them were clicking a little bit rough, but they basically all worked, and we need to move on. So anyway, anybody involved, make sure you say hi to and thank you to. Committee reports. Mr. Keel, I think you had an actual committee that met. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee did meet Monday night and raced through 95% of our agenda before the power got cut to the area. So I will begin, if I may, with the one thing we didn't get to, and that was reviewing the advance interview questions for applicants for our enterprise boards. Each of you should have those at the back of the Human Resources Committee packet that you got with your assembly packet for this meeting. Please give them a look. We can all avoid the terrible amount of time I took asking everybody the same question verbally my first year on the assembly on one of the boards, if we can get it in writing. So please, to avoid my mistake, if we can get those back to our clerks, and I will work with them to prepare for that. The next time we interview applicants for our enterprise boards. Incidentally, that's the second item we did at the Human Resources Committee. The full assembly as HRC, you should have gotten a notice already. We'll meet Wednesday, December 19th at 5:30 p.m. here at City Hall to interview applicants for the Bartlett Hospital, Airport, Bartlett and Airport boards, as well as the Planning Commission. The Human Resources Committee recommended a number of folks for a number of committees, Mr. Mayor, to go through those, try and keep us on time. The HRC recommended appointing Elizabeth Escalin to the Historic Resources Advisory Committee for a term expiring June 30th of 2015.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
We recommended appointing both Louise Wertheimer and Dixie Hood to the Juneau Commission on Aging for terms expiring June 30th of 2015.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
The committee recommended for the Juneau Commission on Sustainability appointing Kate Bevegni to a term expiring June 30, 2013, and Robert Deering to a term expiring June 30 of 2015.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
For the Juneau Economic Development Council, we recommended appointing three people to terms expiring October 31 of 2015. Those were Kurt Fredrickson, Drew Garson, and Anthony Yorba. The committee also recommends appointing Lauren McVeigh to complete a term expiring October 31, 2014.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
Almost there. For the Local Emergency Planning Commission, the committee recommended appointing Roger Reddig to the American Red Cross seat for a term expiring December 31st of 2013, and Paul Nallen to the Hazmat Transporter seat for a term expiring December 31st of 2014.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
And finally, Mr. Mayor, the committee recommended appointing Nina Horn to the Wetlands Review Board for a term expiring December 31st of 2013.
Do I hear any objections? So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Is that where we turned you into the dark? Right about there or where?
It was very shortly after that. We talked about some rescheduling some meetings for to make room for appeals, and those will be publicly noticed. I wasn't going to go through them all tonight right. Unless you'd like.
Good. The other thing off the Wetlands Review Board is that we have Kay Koski leaving the Wetlands Review Board, and he's got, what, 20-some years involved with us. And so we usually send a nice certificate out that says thank you and everything. I talked with, I think, Lori, didn't I talk to you, or Beth? Beth, maybe. But anyway, to bring him into an assembly meeting and for us to say thank you to him in person, I think would be very important for us to do as a group, because he has given a lot over many, many years to our community in that field. So we'll be bringing him forward in a meeting in the future here. Okay, did you have anything else, Mr. Keel?
I think that's enough.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. You did good. Other committees? You had a committee meeting, didn't you, since our last meeting?
Committee of the Whole.
Committee of the Whole? Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. At the Committee of the Whole meeting of November 5th, the project team for SLAM came and gave us a great presentation on where they are and how the progress is going and what they're planning to do and how they're planning to stage things and when they hope to be finished. And so we can expect some movement on that project. Brent Fisher, Parks and Rec Director, reported on the request for a Diamond Park ice rink, and the COW committee requested that the manager meet with the Juneau Community Foundation and discuss a feasibility study, what could go into a feasibility study, so that we will find out more about that. We also asked the manager to look into what the cost would be to get a feasibility study for the Savago Park to have ice there. And then Rory Watt reported on the Department of Transportation project out in Enoch Bay and explained the types of changes that have been recommended by CBJ. And I believe that most of them were accepted, it sounded like. And Al Clow and Rory answered a lot of questions. And the Committee of the Whole agreed to not make any recommendations for change to what was given to us that night, but rather to allow the process to continue the way it normally does. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Wanamaker, committee report?
No Public Works and Facilities Committee report today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Ms. Crane?
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Dibdahl?
Nothing. Thank you.
Mr. Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Lands Committee met on October 29th, and we had three action items that we forwarded to the Assembly. The first was an acquisition, recommended acquisition of parcel at 650 St. Anne's Avenue. The second item was a DOT Thane Road easement donation. It was a small donation of an easement for installation of avalanche cameras in the Thane area. And the third, Mr. Mayor, was the ordinance that you heard this afternoon regarding the shooting ranges, 2012-42. Just heard that. And our next meeting of the Lands Committee is to be held November the 19th.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Jones, do you have anything for us?
No.
Goodies, thank you very much. Move to liaison reports. Mr. Jones?
I attended my first Docks and Harbor meeting, and the harbor director, port director, shared with me something he's been sharing with Ms. Becker when she filled that role, but I just sort of got it. I learned a lot. Try to be relatively quiet. The only thing that I would report was that the major discussion with Docks and Harbors was the changing of the time of their meetings. They usually meet at 7 o'clock. They're going to meet at 5:30 p.m. instead of 7, starting with the January meetings. So the November and December will remain at the 7 o'clock times. Yesterday, Mr. Wanamaker and I attended our first liaisons with the Juneau Economic Development Council. And again, I sort of in that learning curve where I don't know what to report and I'm not sure what I learned, but maybe next time I'll be better. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Jones, liaison report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Planning Commission met recently. Two main items on the agenda. First was the Community Planning Department presented the proposed land disposal areas for affordable housing. And they did so in a matrix that identified the pluses and the minuses attributes, plus and minus for each area that was each of the three areas that were nominated. And this will be presented to the public and coming to the Assembly early in the new year. Needless to say, it was very positive to see that movement in this issue. And the Community Development Department did a great job in presenting this to us. Second, long awaited was the completion of the 2012 update of Title 49, the Land Use Code. That, again, will be likely coming to the Assembly in a matrix, so that rather than an extensive narrative, which will be there, we're going to have the benefit of seeing some of the description in this matrix when it's presented to the Assembly. And again, that's forthcoming. But those are big, very positive moves coming out of the Planning Commission.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Dibdahl?
Airport Board will be meeting next week on the 14th. Unfortunately, I'll be in Anchorage.
All right. Ms. Crane?
I haven't had a meeting with my board yet.
Okay. Jesse?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Eagle Crest Board met recently. They are hopping and getting ready for the planned opening. They are thinking snow and encourage everyone to do the same. I was impressed. They had a recent retreat. The area is working diligently and looking ahead at some of their equipment needs and purchases and some of the changes coming down the pike to the engines and these great big snow groomers they have and planning ahead for some significant savings by purchasing ahead of some big changes that will raise the cost of that equipment. So they're trying to get ahead of the cost curve, which is admirable, and I certainly appreciated that. I thought the Assembly would as well. The Affordable Housing Commission meets this coming week. They have a subcommittee that is revising their task list and working on a number of issues brought forward to that commission by the home building community. And they continue to check items off the task list, to revise it, and focus in on the steps that the city can take to help make it easier bit by bit to address the housing crunch we have here in town. That in the very short term, that fire didn't help any. That's 40, perhaps 50 units of housing that had generally been within what we would consider the affordable band that are not available. So the crunch is worse for now, and that's a major concern. And finally, the local emergency planning committee will meet this coming week. I unfortunately will not be able to attend that due to the municipal league meetings.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Keel. Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Board of Education is meeting today at noon. They hope to have a 15-minute meeting also. It's a special meeting to discuss special education funds possibly being available to be used for next for teacher at Harborview and at Glacier Valley. I don't know what their decision will be, but it's staff recommendation that those be authorized. So we'll learn that from the evening news, I suppose. I did attend the Juneau Economic Development Council meeting yesterday with Mr. Jones, and we received an update on the Juneau Economic Indicators Report. There's some very interesting information in there for us as an assembly and as a city. Part of it is the growth in our senior population. Well, that's very good for us economically and shows stability. It does have tax exemption implications that, you know, we do need to think about. But they had information about medical costs, and they also had information about population growth. It just became available, so you can download it from them or get a copy from them. But apparently we've gained a net of about 500 employee people in the community, and they discussed housing in a general way, and especially in relationship to the fire, and are concerned about making sure that we provide housing in this community and doing what we can to make sure that housing becomes available. So there was a lot in relationship to the Economic Indicators Report. Basically, it's a good report, but it shows some areas that we need to begin working on to strengthen. Another issue that they discussed briefly was their study in progress on the downtown revitalization. And so that's something that will be coming to us. I'm going to talk with them and see if we can't arrange if the Assembly is willing, a report from them where they come and talk to us at a committee of the whole meeting, and they give us a rundown, a holistic rundown on a lot of things. They do work for us, but we get it kind of piecemeal. And I think a top-down overall presentation from them would be helpful for us in providing them with direction, and helpful for them to see where it is we think we need to go and what we want to learn more about. But that's a little ways off in the future. The Economic Council is, you know, they're doing a lot of work, and we need to basically understand where they're going with all of this. And I haven't been a member of that board for a number of years, so I still have catching up to do myself. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Ms. Becker, do you have any liaison reports?
Well, I have not been able to be at any of the board meetings for them, but the Alaska Committee will meet November 14th. That's when it's scheduled, when I will be at AML. The Chamber of Commerce has a new president, Kelly Shattuck. Their next meeting is November 27th. Their next board meeting is November 27th. Their weekly meetings are on Thursdays, their luncheons. And Campus Council, next meeting is December 10th. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Jones, you had something?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Convention Visitors Bureau has not had a meeting recently, but they are undergoing a management change there, and they are currently recruiting for a new CEO. I wanted the Assembly to be aware of that.
All right. Thank you very much. That was an interesting announcement this week, for sure. Thank you. Presiding officer reports. Do we have any presiding officer reports, Mr. Wanamaker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Thrower appeal of the Planning Commission decision for the Berners Avenue exit at Professional Plaza. We had our pre-hearing meeting and issued the orders. We have set a tentative date of hearing the appeal for January 7th at 5 p.m. But we are encouraging settlement discussions. Thank you.
Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Dibdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The appeal for the 16B hearing will be on the 26th, as Mr. Hartle indicated earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Dibdahl. All right. Thank you very much. Anything to follow up on that, staff?
No, thank you, Mr.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, we're down to assembly comments and questions, and I guess it's just kind of interesting to sit here and see Mr. Duncan in the audience. And I don't know how long you've been in your new job, Mr. Duncan, but a few years back it was always, snow is coming. Everybody hope for snow, and he's always like this. And I just noticed him back there when somebody said about snow. He was like this with his new job, I'm sure. Mr. Duncan, welcome to your winters. Okay, Ms. Becker.
Nothing. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Wanamaker.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The fire downtown really does point out the need for the assembly to begin work on what it can do to help ensure that housing is provided in this community. We not only have a problem with the people who lost their living places in the fire, but it makes the problem worse for when the legislature comes to town in just a very short while. This is a very serious issue for our community, and I think that what I would suggest is that the chair of the committee of the whole, Deputy Mayor Becker, appoint a special ad hoc subcommittee to convene that workshop for the assembly with the builders, the financial institutions, and the property owners to hear what needs to be done by the city to allow them to work to provide housing in this community. I believe that Mr. Smith would be a good subcommittee member, and I'm willing to volunteer my time to be a subcommittee member, but I think it's important that we convene that and get that planned and underway as soon as possible, given the seriousness of this housing situation in this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Mr. Keel, you seem to have the sustainability group or the housing group. The housing group is working on some of those issues, too.
Quite a few.
Would you be willing to serve on that subcommittee and bring their information into it, too, so we get it all together under one handle?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to.
Okay, good.
I believe that was one of the goals that we were working on, so I think it's very appropriate that we do that.
Okay, so that would be good if we could get that going with staff and coordinated and moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Wanamaker. Good idea. Mr. Keel, assembly comments.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me join what you said earlier about thanking our firefighters and our professionals, the JPD folks who helped maintain the perimeter, and it was a remarkable response. I had the opportunity to sit with you and Mr. Nankervis and get the extremely knowledgeable narration as we watched the remarkable efforts. But the other thing that impressed me was how well the rest of the team clicked, and you touched on it. The manager would call, you know, our public works director, and we got there was already an update on how well the well field was doing and how much was in the reservoir, and everybody was right on the game. The Centennial Hall was open before people needed to be there. It was staffed, but they didn't call out every staff member conceivable. They called out the number they needed. It was an impressive group effort. We could go on like that. One opportunity I think the city has to do better, the rumor mill spins a lot faster in the electronic age. When I left here that night, certainly the various electronic media I monitor were full, and everybody knew exactly what was going on, and everybody knew how horrifying it was, and the vast majority of it, I happen to have just heard from experts, was incorrect. I spoke with a friend who is married to a firefighter, and certainly the electronic media she monitors were spinning with news about how the terrible number of firefighters who were dead, and thank God that was wrong. So I know that the clerk's office has worked in the past and done some preliminary work toward what the city might be able to do to push information out in situations like that. And and there are challenges, but I would certainly like to work with our manager and with our clerks to pick that effort back up and see if we can, the city can move factual information out to the public a little more effectively, a little more efficiently in those situations.
And Mr. Keel, that will be an incident debriefing as we move forward, some of the pros and cons of what happened. Every situation this big and this many different agencies involved have good points and bad points, and I'm sure that we'll be looking at our incident command system. We have a lot of new people that haven't had any training on incident command yet, and as they march forward in their jobs, they get more and more training, and you know when you have to, in fact, whether we needed to set up a PIO, public relations office or area like the chamber or something like that. Probably we were that close to making that decision to do, but it wasn't needed, and some things get put off until you actually grow your size of your incident and your command post and strategies as you get into the incident deeper and longer. But it's a very important part of the incident command system to have the known factual information getting out there to as many of the people as possible. So it's a good idea and good thoughts. And I'm sure we'll be working on those types of things. Ms. Gray?
Just add my thanks to those of everyone else, to everybody who worked on this, the police and fire. As bad as it was, it could have been much, much worse. And our thanks to those who worked on it for containing it and getting the job done.
And part of our incident command system eventually will include getting all of us together, because when things get drawn out longer, then there's some decision and financial decisions that have to be made for appropriating extra dollars and other things from this body. So this body has to show up at some time during a major emergencies, and that will be all incorporated into our incident command and command system for sure. So, and sometimes you feel a little bit left off because you're at home or someplace like that and nobody's telling you what's going on.
I just thought the best thing I could do was go home and get out of the area.
Yeah. Stay out of the smoke.
Yep.
Mr. Dibdahl.
Nothing, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. With regard to the fire at the appropriate time, I'm thinking it might be a good idea for the Assembly to have an update on the fire risk in the downtown area and what the future strategies are to address that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Jones?
I found it interesting monitoring the police scanner. One of the social medias that I follow gave a link to a scanner I didn't know existed, but I found it pretty interesting. And one of the things I remember hearing was the dispatcher asking who at incident command could talk to the press. And they said, well, so-and-so, but he's too damn busy right now. So it was interesting that came up. The other thing is I want to thank Mr. Wanamaker. This is pretty impressive. And sorry, I'm going to miss a lot of it except for the one on the 10th at the museum, which is the day before we go up to Municipal League. And Jen, just a personal note that also on November 10th is the 237th birthday of the United States Marine Corps, the longest continuous serving service in the U.S. military. So a couple of things to celebrate that day.
Tun Tavern, PA, right?
That's right. One of the first things we learned in boot camp, right?
Out of our little red book, right?
Out of our little red book, yeah. Not Mao's book either.
Yeah. Okay. Continuation of public comments. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to speak to us? Hearing none. There's no executive session. Madam Manager, are we done?
We're done.
Thank you, Madam Manager. We're adjourned.
Thank you.